well, this book doesn't have an index, but if it did, I'd like to check it for inherited wealth.
If only we could take our love of reading to a new level.
Well, I've always wanted to start a book club.
Book club!
For
masochists and other deviants.
Hello and welcome to the Book Club for Masochists, where we read and discuss all the genres and types of literature, regardless of our actual interest in them.
Every month, we read books from a new, randomly picked genre. Then on the podcast, we discuss our reading choices, experiences, opinions, appeal factors, and other related topics as friends and library workers.
In this episode number 112, we will be talking about nonfiction business books.
Hooray.
Yes, I said that with much more enthusiasm than I actually felt.
Well, let's introduce ourselves first.
My name is Anna. I'm a librarian in Las Vegas, Nevada, USA.
My name is Matthew. I'm a librarian in Guelph, Ontario, Canada.
My name is Megan. I am an archivist in the National Capital Region of Canada.
My name is RJ. I'm a librarian in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada.
I meant to do a spooky intro.
Okay.
It's still Halloween in my heart is why.
Wait, what?
I think it's Halloween forever in your heart, Matthew.
Yeah. And in our house.
That's true.
Yeah.
Like you say that, looking at the Halloween decorations we have framed on our wall.
Yes, like literally the multiple Halloween decorations, you know, the pillows in various locations and the decorations framed on the wall. And yeah.
I showed someone the happy Halloween cross stitch I have. That I did on a video call the other day. And they were like, oh, wow, like, did you hang that for Halloween? I'm like, oh, I hadn't even thought about that. This has been on my wall for literally months. Like, of course, I just have happy Halloween on my wall, like, all year round. Like, why would I not do that? Anyway, nonfiction business.
Nonfiction business. Yeah, so I feel like frequently we have genres that I struggle with and I try. I'm going to be honest with you and our listeners. I don't feel like I tried this month. I feel like I tapped out of this one early.
I didn't try terribly hard either. Although I did read something. It is not very true to the genre. It is definitely bending this genre as far as it can go without straight up breaking.
So apparently I read all of your books this month.
As usual.
Actually, no, I've been slacking the last little bit. This is the first time where I could say, like, I've read more books than all of you put together.
I read an entire book, thank you very much.
So with all three of you, that makes two.
Yep, I read a chapter of one book and the introduction of a different book. So what is that, like 0.10?
Depends how long they were, I guess. Before we get into actually talking about these books, because I think that's not very interesting, how about I think talking about what this genre is kind of an interesting thing, because like this is originally in my mind was like, oh yeah, nonfiction business is just one thing, but there's like at least like four or five different types of books that can fall within this area.
For sure.
Yes.
So there's like management books, I think, which are kind of like self-helpy books sometimes, that sort of thing.
The self-helpy thing, I think, goes across multiple aspects of business books. So don't bring that up just for the management ones, because I think it's the other ones too.
You have like biographies of individuals and also books about like specific companies. And you have like actual how to set up a business book, which I don't think any of us read, I assume, unless Megan.
I read something adjacent.
Is it how to start a bicycle business?
No, it is not. A little. Anyway, we'll get into it.
Yeah.
I think that's pretty good. There's like skills-based section on whether that's leadership or business skills or whatever, the self-helpy stuff. I mean, there was a large proponent of, I feel like, more tapped into the self-help ethos of like finding your purpose and being more effective and doing the thing that brings you joy.
Sort of inspirational.
Yeah.
Self-help.
Yeah, a touch more inspirational.
Yeah.
For sure. And then some memoirs, like you mentioned biography, but also memoir and history, sort of a business area almost, rather than a company itself.
Yeah. And those can be tied into like technology as well sometimes.
There's also a fair number of them that aren't maybe necessarily business books by their own definition of what they are doing, but are treated by business books by people with who are business people, right? So they're the ideas books.
Like the Art of War.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. Yeah, for sure.
And the other one is How to Get a Job.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, like the Golden Parachute.
And also like your CV and, yeah.
Resume writing for dummies.
Yeah.
Or even like what sort of area do you maybe would fit your personality?
Yeah. I definitely read one of those. So you like books. So what kind of job should you get?
Yep. Yes. I definitely got rid of one of those not long ago.
Speaking of those, I was talking with Anna about this and the management course that we had to do as part of our master's degree. I see someone else did not enjoy that course. And this anecdote, I think, really kind of explains my relationship to these sorts of those sorts of books specifically. So an assigned text for this course was some sort of personality quiz thing that we were supposed to go to like to the university bookstore and buy and then complete. I don't know if it was for the first like session or like during the first session.
Really?
Yeah, literally, this is what our instructors had us do. And I did not do it and said, this is stupid bullshit and I hate it.
I think we had the same instructor. And yeah, I feel like that course's syllabus was sort of whatever bullshit he wanted to talk about that week.
This was a different person then.
No, it was different.
We had two instructors teaching.
We had two.
And neither of them was that person.
Well, they were both bad then.
Well, here's the funny thing. He's not even done with
I'm not even done with the story.
Like, continue. Sorry.
I did like legitimately try in the class. And like, I was like, but the number of options for question one were like, I literally cannot answer this question. None of these are things that I would respond to this question with because it was like multiple choice, I guess. And so like, I was like, said like, I'm just the conflict arguing person or whatever. And one of the professors was like, okay, yeah, that's fine. I know who you are. That's understandable. And they was like, no, you have to do this. And the other professor was like, no, I know this student. This is fine. They're not going to do this. Like, no matter how much we ask, they're not going to bother, basically. And I'm like, that's kind of really illustrates my opinion of so much of these things.
Yeah. Well, the funny thing was, so one of the options of what kind of worker you could be was a challenger. And I was like, look, instructors, by the very fact that he is absolutely refusing to do this because he's challenging it, because he thinks that it is a broken way of thinking about who works in the workplace, tells you exactly which one of these he would fit into. He would be the challenger. So just like, don't bother with the test, you know.
Yep.
Have you guys ever had, we're getting a little off topic now, but have you ever had to do like one of those in a professional environment? I had to do like what color is your personality thing for a professional development day. And it was the worst.
I have not, but I barely missed it for the same workplace, RJ, because they had color. They had a color one too. And oh, really?
Yeah. Different. My previous workplace.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I was a blue. I was a strong blue. And I remember we like took a break at one point and one of my coworkers, who I was not at the same table at for this exercise. So we hadn't had a chance to discuss this, but we saw each other in the washroom during the break. And she's like, so I'm a Ravenclaw. What are you? Which was like basically the test. It was like, you could be one of these four colors and they fit pretty cleanly with the Hogwarts houses. And it feels just as meaningful of an exercise.
Yeah. Yeah. I fell in between rounds of that at a workplace where I did not have to do it because I was not a permanent full-time at that time. And I fell in between for some other stuff and didn't have to do it. So I've never had to do it, but only narrowly. And I suspect it may come up in my current workplace at some point or another.
I will say that like my last couple of jobs and the book I read this month and the last year of unemployment have really kind of taught me that to be successful at work, I need to skip every single meeting or training like that possible. and just not go to them.
It just brings up strife.
It makes me upset. It makes everyone else upset. Just don't go to them is the answer for this for me.
It was so interesting that day that I had to do this because the first half of the day was like the color test. And that was organized by this a particular coworker who I'm not even going to vaguely try to identify. but, you know, just a coworker that I did not work that closely with. And the second half of that professional development today was planned by a coworker that I worked quite closely with and had a good relationship with and felt like had more respect for, you know, how she did her job. And the second half of the day was like emergency planning. Like, what do we do if an earthquake hits campus? And it's like, oh, maybe we should have spent all day on this.
Yeah.
I think that was my favorite part of the management class was talking about disaster plans.
Mm. Yeah, that's true.
I literally remember nothing from that class.
It's not that training and development is bad inherently, but just there's so many bullshitty ways to do it.
Yeah.
That, and I feel like those personality test things a lot of times are people who have developed them and, you know, are good at marketing themselves to employers that, that are not sure how to train their employees.
Yeah. I was talking with a, with somebody recently who had a science, a hard sciences kind of degree and had at some point or another worked at a university where they would cover your degrees, you know, give you free tuition to get another degree if you wanted one. So they had decided to get an MBA because it was one of the few degrees they could fit into the timing and do online and like make work for them and, you know, in their life. And so they decided to do an MBA and they thought maybe it would, you know, help, could help them out in their career in the future. And then they were like, yeah, it all just felt like wishy-washy crap. Like, I'm not going to say that, you know, that wishy-washy BS. Like, it just did not, like, there was nothing there most of the time. Like, there were a few classes that are genuinely, like, there's some hard content in there. But the vast, vast majority of it, he was like, that was not, like, a real degree after having done my, like, hard sciences. Like, he's like, I don't think that was a real degree. It made me laugh. I was like, yeah, I actually kind of understand that with the degree I'm getting right now, because there are definitely days when I'm like, is this a real degree?
Honestly, the Master of Library Studies is pretty similar as well.
I know. There's some of that, too. Although I was telling you, Matthew, I think I read more scholarly literature for my master's in library studies than I did for the current degree I'm getting.
I'm not saying that you can't do a thorough and rigorous approach to your library degree, but I'm saying that you also don't have to.
Oh boy, we're gonna, I feel like this is the first episode where I'm like, we're gonna get ourselves in trouble.
Oh, we totally are. Yeah.
I do have coworkers that listen to this.
Okay, well, I can edit these sections out.
No, it's okay. I don't think that I have any coworkers who will care, but.
And the funnier thing is that, like, we've been told to students in classes to listen to this podcast.
It's true. Yeah.
I mean, I don't think this is surprising to them. I don't think this is surprising to anyone who gets any of these degrees for the most part, because this is one of the perennial issues with any forms of professional degrees is like, how do you prove the professionalization, especially when it is not something that can be proven with numbers, right? Because we're a number-oriented world. This is like the, like why economics is considered sort of the hard sciences of the MBA, but reality is like economics is a whole lot of
bullshit.
Well, crap too. Yeah. It just uses numbers. And so therefore it is the fancy hard sciences version one, just because it uses numbers. But like any of these things that aren't like really, really based in like hard observable fact that can be quantified are always going to have this problem.
I'm just now imagining like actually approaching libraries as though it were a hard science and being like, okay, here's our control library and we're going to do nothing here. And then this identical library in another location, we'll try this new approach to doing library stuff.
Oh, I love that.
And like being like, okay, we've made sure that all of the patrons are the same as well. So they have to alternate which library they go to. Or like split each family down. Great. This child goes to this library and this child goes to the other library.
I think this is a great idea. I'd love to to try out some things. Be like, this library, here's our control library that operates the way that, you know, such and such library currently does. And then this library is fine, free, and has no security system.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
This is the Anarchy Library, and we want to see how they both run.
Yeah, one only has books, and the other has, like, a makerspace.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So, background in business reading, hey?
Yeah, I did a management course. I just told you, Megan.
Has anybody read, like, what color is your parachute or something like that?
No, no. I feel like I might have, when I was much younger, read something slightly adjacent to this, but I can't think of any titles. It wasn't anything as classic as What Color Is My Parachute or Who Moved My Cheese, I think is the other one.
Yeah.
I read The Art of War as a teenager.
Mm-hmm. But did you read it for business reasons?
Did you read it for business?
As a teenager.
I don't know. Maybe you had a banging business selling bicycle tires.
Yeah, Matthew was very, very different as a teenager.
Matthew was a big capitalist as a teen.
Totally. He just grew out of that phase.
I mean, I say that, but I know someone in my life who's like a generation older than us who was like a big Reagan fan as a teen and then like grew out of that and became like very left wing. Anyway.
The one I've read the most of is somewhere in the realm of history or biography, because I've read like that book about coffee that was really about like the coffee industry. And it was really very much about the business of coffee and how coffee over the year, like, you know, from the 1800s to now, how the business of coffee operated in a lot of ways, because it's all tied into a lot of like of international and climate issues and exploitation of workers and all sorts of other issues like that would come up in there too, but that's all tied up with the business of how it's run.
Mm-hmm.
And then I read like at least part of the Kellogg's book. The Kellogg's book is really, really long. What is the there was a recent biography like a couple of years ago that was about the Kellogg's brothers.
Oh.
But it was huge. And so I think I read like 70% of it, and then I was like, I'm exhausted. I have to stop.
I'm Kellogged out.
I am Kellogged out. I don't even like cereal, so why am I reading this? I really, genuinely, I don't like cereal, so like.
There were all kinds of weird stuff about like the wellness industry, which I thought might be interesting. But yeah, if it's a 1,000-page doorstopper. Mm-hmm. I think I read at least part of Rich Dad, Poor Dad.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like it was book club adjacent, but I don't really remember why I picked it up, except that it was super popular or something. And that was about investment or real estate or something like that.
I feel like I've gotten asked for that one at the library quite a few times.
Oh, yeah, I have.
Like more so than What Color Is Your Parachute and the other big name ones.
Mm-hmm. I think that's true for me, too, from my public library days. That is probably the one I've been asked for the most. 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. I think I've been asked for that one a couple of times too.
Mm-hmm.
Have you read it?
No.
Megan, Rich Dad, Poor Dad was in the self-help episode.
So I did try to read it. Okay, that makes sense.
It's in the did not finish category when we used to use that category.
It became redundant at a certain point, I assume. So I realized the other day, just like 2 days ago, it struck me that I read business nonfiction all the time, because I read the Ask a Manager advice column quite regularly by Allison Green. And I realized 2 days ago that she's also written several books. And I probably could have looked for those and would have enjoyed them. But I just didn't think of it. But yeah, Ask a Manager, it's like an advice column, but it is specifically work questions, and she has a bunch of experience and is really good, I think, at both giving practical advice and not being like a shitty capitalist is the only way I can think to phrase it.
So, secret hidden Easter egg that no one will ever find. What's the date? Okay. So sometime in the last year, one of the co-hosts of this podcast has had a question answered in that column.
But yeah, that is. I think that is a good, if you want to read this genre, but are as wary of it as we have been, Allison Green is pretty good.
So how did we go about looking for books? Because I remember having real good intentions of picking some of the books that were recommended to us on like Twitter and the Facebook group and stuff, but did not at all.
I did follow through on that. I requested every single one of those books that were recommended on Facebook or Twitter to us through my public library. And I had a stack of like 12 of them.
And how did that go?
I read one of them. I told you.
Yeah.
They sat on my floor. And I think I used some of them to flatten something.
Well, that's good that they got some use.
Yep.
I got recommended. So in my job currently, I have found myself doing a lot more work with a kind of staff management sort of recently. And I've run into a few instances of some really difficult conversations that, I mean, they're the kind of difficult conversations that come up when you're managing staff with the added complication of technically I'm not their supervisor, but I am kind of managing them now, but I'm not their supervisor. So I've been trying to navigate that. So I got a recommendation from Matthew's mother for a book, but of course it came in about a week before we are recording this. So there is no way I was reading that right now. I'm still trying to finish the one that I had already started reading. So I did not read it, but I may actually go back and look at that one. But how I actually selected books was I went to my shelf knowing that a lot of business books kind of are what I would say are those ideas books that are sort of like adopted by business to be, you know, of use to them. And so I pulled a few things off that I had seen recommended before by, you know, businessy folks. And I did not read any of those pretty much. And then I read one vaguely adjacent to business in a very sideways way that you will see in a little bit. But I did start, though I didn't get very far into it, one called The Paradox of Choice, Why More is Less by Barry Schwartz. Because I had it on my shelf. Because why not? Because I'm pretty sure I bought it for like 50 cents from the library bookstore I used to work at. But I didn't get very far into that one. I kind of started reading that one because I felt guilty that the book I was actually reading was really not a business book.
You just made me realize I'd finish another book this month that that counts.
You're welcome.
Oh man. Anyway, my tactic has been for a while, since I'm a little bit limited in like holds and picking stuff up with the recent like we've recently gone back into a period of more restrictions rather than less, and I just haven't been feeling like I want to go far away to the library that has a bigger collection. So I did my usual, like, let's go into Libby and see what's under the business tag. And let's just pick the ones that are available right now. And then the other funny thing that seemed to have happened is maybe it's because we know our genres a little bit more in advance. So I had requested some stuff, but I don't know where I got them from. So they were, like, completely random to me. It's been a weird month.
Yeah, fair.
Yeah, I only have vague memories of how I picked my books. I'm sure I searched the library catalog. I don't remember. I feel like I may have been looking, trying to find more specific cross sections than just like business. And for one of them, I know exactly what I was searching for. And we'll talk about that when I talk about what I attempted to read. But I think a lot of it, I was just sort of looking through the library catalog and pulling things for our Black, Indigenous, and People of Color book list. So I think some things I encountered by doing that. Yeah, as I said, I didn't read a book this month. So, one of the book that I was actually like excited to read, that I like had positive feelings about reading, whether or not I would have finished it, remains an unknown because I put a hold on it. And, because holds in my library system are really backed up right now, because they're still catching up on the backlog from, the several months we were closed. That book did not come in. And that was the one about the, Beanie Babies.
Nice.
The rise and fall of, I don't remember the title, but the rise and fall of the Beanie Baby craze, which I, you know, someday when I'm not doing this podcast anymore, I still might be interested in reading. Or if we do another like vaguely related enough genre in the future.
Economics is on our list.
For sure. Yeah, I'll do that for economics. Absolutely. The books I ended up bringing home were all ones that were available in my like home branch that I work at. So that made a lot of the decision making for me.
Yeah, and I ended up reading one from off of my own shelf, but we actually, as much as I was just dissing on MBAs, we have an MBA at the university where I work at. It's aimed very specifically at healthcare providers, so it really focuses very much in on how would you start your own practice and run your own practice as a healthcare provider. So it's a very specific and practical focus of an MBA. But that means we do have a handful of books on our shelves, which is why I have a little bit of a sense of like what falls into MBA reading for different types of classes, is because I purchased some of these books for some of these different classes, and projects that they're doing. So I did go look through some of them, and some of the big ones that are on there, like the one about eating the frog that's been like talked about.
I'm sorry. What?
What? It's like called like Eat That Frog or something like that. It's an anti-procrastination book.
Eat That Frog.
Eat That Frog. 21 great ways to stop procrastinating and get more done in less time.
Yeah.
I'm remembering this now. Yeah. The metaphor is that like you're supposed to like get the most unpleasant thing out of the way first, right? So if you have to eat a frog, it's like eat the frog first.
Yeah. Or like the other one that I see all the time is the great eaters great leaders eat last. So I see that one all the time because, and some of this is because they have kind of catchier covers and also catchier titles and things. And so they tend to get like, people pick them up and are like, maybe I'll try that one for my assignment on, maybe. But you do get, what I find interesting is there are, like I've talked to some students that are working on projects that are very specifically about how to run businesses as a healthcare professional. And some of them are really super into it. And how do you figure this out and navigate doing this? And it is like a very specific set of knowledge you have to have. Like it, as much as I was ragging on the MBA degree, like there is a very specific set of knowledge you have to have in order to be able to successfully start up and keep solvent a business. Mm-hmm. So anyways, I didn't read any of those books and I hadn't the slightest desire to do so. I read something totally unrelated, but we'll get there after we talk about some of the 18 bazillion books Megan read.
Yeah, so I grouped them, so at least they'll be grouped in some sort of thematic way. And so I've got three that are kind of like industry-based books. Two were memoirs, and the third one is more of a investigative journalism, the one that Anna just reminded me that I finished and kind of counts. So that was Salt, Sugar, Fat, How the Food Giants Hooked Us. And prior to remembering that this book counted, I was like, oh, geez, all of my books were written in the last 18 months. That's really weird. But this was written in 2013. It's written by Michael Moss. It's a 500-page doorstopper, which is why it took me like 4 months to finish. And it's basically all about the food industry and the reasons why they put more fat, salt, and sugar into their food and how that, I guess, affects the food business.
It's delicious.
It's delicious, yes, and makes stuff shelf stable and hides bad tastes in the food. And it's cheaper in a lot of ways with different food subsidies. Like, it's a whole thing. If you're interested, go read it. Oh, I lied about the last 18 months thing. But this was my other exception. So it's I read this book called Liar's Poker, which was originally published in 1989. And I read a more recent edition that was published in 2010. It's written by Michael Lewis, who also wrote books you might be familiar with, Moneyball, The Blind Side, The Big Short. At least two of those have been turned into movies. So The Liar's Poker is about Lewis's time being a bond salesman during the 1980s. And what I found enormously interesting about this book, aside from the whole, like, really weird culture of chasing after money and the salespeople, which sounded like horrendous, but there you go, is that they also explain how they turned mortgages into something that you could buy bonds in, which leads up to the whole subprime mortgage crisis that we had in 2008. So that gives you like great history on how all this using money to make more money thing kind of screwed it up for other people later on down the line. And then my last industry-based one is another memoir called Uncanny Valley, published this year by Anna Weiner? I don't know. And this is a memoir that talks about her time working for technology startups in the Silicon Valley. So she's like, she did an English degree, she was working in publishing in New York City, and then got a job with a startup for a short amount of time, and then was like, oh, hey, maybe this is a thing that I could do instead of, you know, working for no money for publishers and being stressed all the time. So what I liked about this book was I thought it talked about more than just the startup culture itself and like the coders and the environment of the startup, but also the impact all of these startups and all of this money had on the Silicon Valley and San Francisco. So there's a lot of stuff about that happens. The kind of data collection, because she works for a data analysis company. Privacy concerns. She works in customer support and like stuff around moderation. So I found that really interesting because it's kind of like a hindsight view on all these things that in the moment people thought were not such a big deal, but becomes issues that we're actually really concerned about nowadays. So those were my three like industry-based books.
Anyone have a related book?
Nope. Not that I'm reading right now. Well, okay. Not that I read for this month, but I am actually, I just literally yesterday started The Poison Squad, which is a history of how we came to have the FDA and like all of these regulations on food safety.
Ooh.
So it's I don't know if you've heard the story of like the food scientists from back in the early 1900s who spent a bunch of time like having men eat meals that were intentionally laced with various additives that were being added into food products to see whether or not this made them sick.
I just heard about stuff about people putting like sawdust in their bread and stuff.
Oh yeah, they did also. Like they used to use formaldehyde in milk a lot.
Oh god,
it was very common.
The salt, sugar, fat book talk about the pink slime thing where they were injecting meat with ammonia.
Yeah.
Anyway. Yeah.
Yeah. That was a thing. All of this stuff that you're just like, oh, thank goodness for these laws that like regulate these things. But anyway, so I learned about all this originally from some SciShow episode that I don't know like which one. I'll have to dig that up for you, Matthew, so you could link that into things. But so that made me sort of interested in this book when I saw it, and I needed to use up a credit for an audiobook. So I used up a credit for an audiobook to get this one and just started listening to it, totally unrelated to business book. I just think it's a bonkers story. That's all.
Yeah.
So the book I read and finished, I read every word.
Every word? Did you read the acknowledgement and like...
I didn't read the index.
Did you read the copyright stuff?
Okay. Yeah. I was going to say, I read every word, but did they register in my mind? No. I read...
You looked at every word.
Hey, honestly, like this afternoon while finishing this book, I was like, I'm reading every word, but none of it is staying in my mind. So I read No Hard Feelings, The Secret Power of Embracing Emotions at Work by Lil Fosslien and Molly West Duffy. And I read it in part because it was not very long. It was only like 248 pages. And there's a bunch of like drawings and stuff, like cartoon sort of things. Anyway, at the very end, there's this... there's a weird summary. There's some summaries at the end, and I don't really understand. I'm like, you already have a blurb on the book. Why would you do this? And the slightly longer summary says, No Hard Feelings is a wickedly funny. And at this point, I said out loud, this book was supposed to be funny. sure, some of it is mildly amusing, but describing your book as wickedly funny is, I think, going a bit far, in my opinion. Anyway, it talks about a bunch of different emotion stuff and how you can have emotions at work. And I mostly just found it really depressing, exceptionally mm-hmm. so. And it is tied into like COVID and being unemployed and things that happened at jobs I've had in the past. And it just, yeah, just made me really depressed. Made me wonder if I wanted to work in libraries anymore. You know, which is not what I expected this month to cause. Like, not that form of depression. I didn't expect me to enjoy the books this month, but I didn't expect me to, like, wonder if the last 8 years of my life have been a waste of time.
Hey.
So, two things in this book that I will mention that I thought were interesting is there's a number of stories about men and women in the workplace and gendered expectations and things like that. And at one point, it's talking about coders at some company, like programmers. And there's an anecdote. There's a lot of anecdotes in this. This is not, you know, I think all of these books are just like, look at this anecdote. This clearly proves my point. And I'm like, this is one example. Anyway, about this person saying that they were a woman and they were a programmer and that the advice that their colleagues were giving them were like not as harsh as the advice they were giving to the male members of the programmers of this company. And so they were just like, so the solution was that to treat her harshly as well. I'm just like, that is a terrible solution. Maybe like it's cool if you don't constantly create the best possible code forever. You don't have to. And the other bit was like talking about the difference between people asking for promotions. And I'm just like, maybe people aren't asking for promotions because they don't want a promotion. You know, maybe people don't want additional responsibilities. And that was the sort of thing that is never acknowledged in these books. These books seem to always be about how you can go up and get more power and get a more important thing and get more responsibilities. I'm like, some people are just happy doing what they're doing and they don't want to, you know, have more responsibilities.
I sort of figure, though, that those people who are happy where they are aren't picking up the self-help business book, though.
Like, that's true to some extent, I think. But, like, the book doesn't mention those people existing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. I think part of the problem, and in the one chapter of the one book that I read, also had this problem where it just sort of, like, implicitly accepts the logic of capitalism.
Yeah.
Where it does not question whether it just, yeah, describes a phenomenon and does not question whether or not this is a good thing or that this is the way all workers behave, but it's just like, this is the way things are. I'll get into it when I talk about this book, but, treats like a, not only a sort of driven to rise and escalate and perpetual growth form of career progression
mm-hmm.
as natural and right, but an unhealthy relationship with work as sort of the baseline.
The one other thing that like this wasn't in the book, but it made me realize this. Was one of the reasons why I really don't enjoy applying for jobs. And it talked about how unsatisfying it is to work somewhere and not get any feedback on the work you're doing. And I'm like, oh, like applying for jobs. Where you send up a resume and a CV and you put a bunch of work into it and you never hear back. Or you interview and they never contact you again. Or even you like do an interview and they say you didn't get the job. And it's just like you do all this work for like nothing. And it just like is very demoralizing.
You don't even get feedback.
I feel like the only time I've gotten in applying to libraries, the only time I've gotten feedback was somebody who emailed me back after I applied and just told me like everyone else who applied was just much more qualified than you were. And I was like, that's not particularly helpful feedback. I think I could have understood that by the fact that I didn't get the job. Just feedback that I can't really do anything about.
Yeah.
Ouch. That sucks. I'm sorry, RJ.
Yeah. No, it was ages ago at this point. And it was at a much smaller library system in my home state, and so I feel like I probably am in a better job now than that one that I was applying for.
I think a lot about how much our intake of media from so many different areas involves overcoming procrastination and being more productive. Like the focus on productivity as the ultimate goal of everything is intense. And it is pervasive, and it underlies even things that have nothing to do with business. Everything about our lives is supposed to be productive at all times. And there are so many different things that are guiding you in how to be more productive. And this is something I find myself actively fighting against, where I'm like, I do not need to perfect myself by making myself as absolutely maniacally productive as possible. So no, I will not learn how to do a bullet journal. And no, I will not like buy fancy calendars that, you know, are going to make me more disciplined. And I will not institute this morning routine that's going to somehow make my morning streamlined. I'm just going to do the thing that feels good, not the thing that is productive. And I find myself constantly fighting against that narrative because it is pervasive and it doesn't always come out as a like, it doesn't even always say exactly the word productivity. A lot of times it's just like how to do it better, right? How is it going to be better for you? But when you analyze what better means within the context of what they're saying, it's not being happier, it's being more productive.
Yeah.
We make 2 podcasts a month. RJ makes 4 podcasts a month. We are productive enough.
We are very productive as far as I'm concerned.
Very productive.
I'm really too productive and I'm trying to scale back.
Me too.
The Uncanny Valley book has a little bit where she talks about, you know, that like quantified life movement thing where everybody had like a step tracker and something tracking your heart rate and how well are you sleeping and how much are you sleeping and whatever. And is your nutrition like optimized and whatever. And she's got a little bit where she's like, listen, maybe I like my inefficient way of doing things where I just like listen to the radio and occasionally read a book and go for a walk. And it's not the most efficient way to do things, but I enjoy it. Yeah, I enjoy my inefficiencies. Anyway, yeah.
Yeah, A plus. How many sets do you have, Megan?
So I have 2 more. So I'll talk about I've chunked these 3 together. I've called them like work and purpose. It's my grand overarching theme.
Megan, how many books did you read?
A lot. I read a lot of books, okay?
Let's not go there.
Let's not talk about the things that I'm ignoring while I'm reading all the books, okay?
I was about to say, people cope in different ways. Some of us don't read at all. Some of us read quite a bit.
I read 1 prose book this month. This is it. That's all I read of anything. Not even just for the podcast, of anything.
I think I read like 30 books this month.
Oh my God.
Not just for the podcast, but like overall. And that's not all prose. That's including like some graphic stuff and like pure picture books.
I've read like 30 something graphic novels this month, but those don't count as books to me for reading purposes because they don't take as long.
No, I don't do it that way.
Well, that sounds like the productivity trap getting to you.
Yeah.
This doesn't right. count because it didn't take as long.
That's right.
Or something. I don't know. Okay. Who's talking next?
It's Megan. Megan.
Megan's talking. Okay.
So included in this is Joy at Work, Organizing Your Professional Life by Mary Kondo and Scott Sonenshin. I think that's how you pronounce his last name. So the first couple chapters is kind of what you'd expect from Mary Kondo. She's telling you how you can organize your desk and your like workspace, whatever. Like if you've read other books of hers, you'll know what the gist is. And then the rest of a couple other chapters are more led by Sonenshin, and it talks more about like organizing your digital life and like your networking and this stuff like that. And then like the guiding theme all the way through is like this idea of focusing more on the joy in your work environment and try to like shift, or maybe sometimes that means changing your job, but maybe that just means trying to, you know, take on more tasks and let go of other things that don't bring you joy in your life. Like you don't enjoy them. They're not bringing you any benefit. Like trying to massage your work environment and tasks and such into such a way that is more enjoyable, more pleasurable, more brings you more value, kind of like you feel accomplished or whatever. So that's one book. This one was kind of ridiculous, but Soulbatical by Shelley Paxton is kind of like a memoir where she talks about how she was working in business and she works so much. She's always like, like health issues and burning out and all this kind of thing. And finally she like decides to take a year off and actually like relax a little bit and figure out what she wants to do. What caught me at the beginning of this book is she's like, listen, if all you're going to say is how nice for you, and not do any of the like, cause it has some workbook aspects where you're supposed to try and figure out where your soul's purpose and work is matching up, which I didn't bother to do. So if all you're going to do is that, then don't bother, read the book. Like clearly it's not for you. And I was like, no, but I'm reading a business book. So I finished it, but it was I definitely did not get anything out of it. But anyway, so that's her like taking a year off, figuring out what she's really feeling called to do and wants to do. And then she becomes a consultant and now it's her whole Soulbatical or soul. I forget what the branding necessarily was for it, but I was kind of like, this feels like just another consultant branding thing that's going to come into different businesses and say, well, we find your soul's purpose and also make more money or something like that. But clearly this did not strike joy into my heart. So maybe that's just for another audience. And the last one I started reading, and I'm finding it really interesting, is it's called Think, Say, Do. And this is sort of 50% for businesses looking to, I guess, think about how they're going forward. And like 50%, you could use it as a self-help thing if you wanted to. It's by Ron Tite. Anyway, wow.
Listen, I'm trying not to laugh at people's names, but you're making it pretty hard.
That just kept going. I kept thinking it would stop with, but they just kept being new ways.
I wrote it down wrong, and then I'm not sure how to pronounce T-I-T-E. There we go. It's an agency, like a marketing agency or something. His work is in the realm of marketing, so advertising and stuff like that. And he's saying, like, listen, if you want to have, like, something that people are going to trust in and go for, because the first bunch of it's all about, like, oh, my God, people are so exhausted and overwhelmed by all the ads and pitches and crap that goes on nowadays. They've had enough of all of it. They don't know who to trust, whatever. So you have to, you know, put together what you think, what you believe, what you're saying, and what you're doing. They all have to, like, go together in a certain way. And he uses the example of REI, the outdoor equipment company, who are like, we believe people should spend more time outdoors. So we're just going to close on Black Friday and pay our employees to, you know, spend the day and go outside and do things that we believe in. So whatever. That's the gist of the book. And it's written really engaging. I think one of my favorite things is, like, every chapter has got a quote that's completely ridiculous and then slapped on, like, someone's famous name. Like, you know how sometimes there's inspirational quotes and then it's by Winston Churchill and really Winston Churchill didn't say that. Well, it's kind of like that, but it's made much more ridiculous so that you can laugh at it. So and so that's kind of like, it's largely focused on businesses trying to think about how they're doing their ad campaigns in such a way that it fits in with the purpose of the business. And one of the things I really liked about it actually was he was like, listen, the face of your business is actually your front-facing staff. And if your front-facing staff have no idea what you're going on about, then they're not going to be engaged by whatever it is you say that you believe and you want to do with your business. And so you actually have to care about your frontline staff. And I was like, yes, please care about your frontline staff. We're not all interchangeable cobs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Please.
Please, libraries, please.
Care about people. So those were my work and purpose books.
Mine was totally not a work and purpose book.
Tell us about it.
I will. I will also admit that I literally just now realized that I also read in the last year at least two or three other books that can be counted as business books. So apparently I read more of these than I think I do. Because it just occurred to me that in the last few months I have listened to Grocery, The Buying and Selling of Food in America by Michael Rollman, which is definitely a form of a business book. And I've talked about several times the Do Nothing, How to Break Away from Overworking, Overdoing, and Underliving by Celeste Hadley, which is also very clearly, this one is very aligned with what you were just talking about, Megan. And then just a few months before this year, so like at the end of December in 2019, I read The Good University, What Universities Actually Do and Why It's Time for a Radical Change, which is basically a business book just for universities. Mm-hmm. So
business is everywhere.
It's everywhere.
Being sneaky.
So I'm literally having a realization that crap, I read a lot of business books. Okay. So with that realization.
Yeah, I guess like any sort of management for libraries book or things like that is management, but not business potentially. So.
I don't know. I think that part of why this came up. Oh, and I realized another one that I read one by Elaine de Botton that is about like work. The Pleasures and Sorrows of Work, I think, is what it's called. It's not great, but, you know, it's a book.
That pages.
Yeah, faint praise. It is a book.
It is a book. It actually had a lot of nice pictures.
Words, a lot of them.
Yep, has that. So what I read, because I thought I did not read business books, which is a total lie, I read a book called The Steal, A Cultural History of Shoplifting by Rachel Steyer. So you can see how this is like kind of a business book and kind of totally, utterly not. this is sort of more the type of reading I like to do where I like to read about a cultural phenomenon in some way. So this is more like a cultural phenomenon and let's dig into that cultural phenomenon. It just happens to be shoplifting, which happens to overlap a bunch with how we think about money and consumerism and objects, and also a lot of gender stuff is in here because it talks a bunch about how shoplifting is a very feminized crime in terms of how we've conceptualized it over time. The book has a very interesting topic and premise and a lot of interesting information, but I did not particularly like how it was written. I think the biggest weakness of this book is its structure is not very strong. It's kind of a lot of anecdotes strung together, which sounds very familiar from other business books, but it done in a very different way because it's more of a hit. Like, a lot of it is history with some cultural examination as well. It talks a little bit about celebrities in relation to shoplifting because there's, you know, I think Winona Ryder. But even within some paragraphs or sentences, it's like the thread gets lost a little bit. And then sometimes I found myself in the middle of a chapter wondering, what was this chapter about again? I don't remember what this chapter was supposed to be about. Not that this isn't interesting, but why am I reading it? So it's a very interesting premise and it's interesting topic. And there's some interesting things that she explores in here, but I just don't think this was an excellently written book, sadly. So if you just want it for curiosity because it's kind of sounds like a fun thing to read more about, then sure, go for it. But, you know, go for it with that little, you know, added breadcrumb of like, maybe don't go for it for the quality of the writing. Sorry, author. Wasn't my version of good quality writing. That's all. So anyways, that's the one I read. It's not really exactly a business book. It's only sort of kind of maybe businessy. It did talk a little bit about one of the things that, because this is just an ongoing problem, like I said, was the structure of it. I can't figure out what she's trying morally to say about shoplifting because it keeps feeling like she's making moral statements, but they seem to conflict with each other. And sometimes she's very pro-business anti-shoplifter and sometimes she's very pro-shoplifter anti-business. And sometimes it's both in the same sentence. And I just wasn't sure what was being said exactly.
Maybe she don't know either.
Maybe. I don't know.
It's not a black and white issue. You can be like pro shoplifting from Walmart and anti shoplifting from locally owned businesses.
Yeah, because she talked about some of that. She talked a little bit about freegans and like the movement to, you know, eat and consume only things that others that you can get for free and that others have kind of tossed away as things they don't want or need themselves anymore. And she talked about even within that, there's a lot of controversy about the shoplifting thing, because if the idea is that you're doing this because you don't want more things to be produced in the world, then if you're shoplifting goods from a store, they're going to produce more goods to put on the shelf for people to buy. Like, it's not – that's not stopping that cycle or interrupting that cycle, really. Mm-hmm. Anyways, so she does go through some of these complications. I just found that I couldn't – I had to think my own way through what she was saying instead of following her logical progression of thought. Mm.
Is it obvious that I've kind of zoned out from when all of you are talking about these business books?
No.
Okay. Well, I have.
No. I've done it a few times.
Are we all admitting here that we are not paying perfect attention to business books?
I'm good. Like I said, you know, I usually try and fail on these genres, and this month I just didn't try.
What did you pick up?
So the two books that I read a very small section of, the first one that I'll mention is titled Different, Not Less, Inspiring Stories of Achievement and Successful Employment from Adults with Autism, Asperger's, and ADHD, edited by Temple Grandin, who you may have heard of. Yeah, so I found this one because I was searching for, I was thinking about all of the various forms that this genre takes, and was like, oh, maybe there is a good book about, like,
Christmas music.
I should have. ADHD in the workplace that I could read. And I'll go ahead and disclose for our listeners and you guys, I guess, that I have suspected for about a decade that I have undiagnosed ADHD. And I went ahead and got diagnosed this year and started medication. And yeah, fancy that. This year, I felt like my regular coping mechanisms weren't working.
Really?
I decided I needed more support. So if it's something you've been wondering about yourself, go ahead and get diagnosed. No, I encourage you to seek you know, professional structured supports if you feel like that's something you're struggling with. But I thought it would be interesting to read a book about it as I was thinking about it more. And I was really intrigued by the sub title on this one, that it grouped autism, Asperger's, and ADHD together like that, and which is not something I had encountered before. And like thinking about it, I was like, I guess I can kind of see like drawing a connection, because they're all like disorders that affect the way that you sort of process stimuli and like impact your social relationships, and probably like in the workplace there might be some dots to connect. And so I picked it up because I was really interested to see how they connected those dots, why they chose to do that, and also it was available in my home branch. So I grabbed it. Fun thing, there's no content about ADHD in the book at all, as far as I can tell. I read the introduction and I expected that to be where they're like, you know, this is why we included stories about ADHD. Wasn't mentioned at all. There's a note in the back that's like, you know, one of the appendix or you know, back matter sections is, you know, a note from Temple Grandin about the DSM. And I was like, oh, maybe this is where she makes this connection. Nothing about it there. And so I was like scanning the stories that are included, just like looking for anyone that mentioned ADD or ADHD. And didn't find anything. Went online, looked at reviews, and two of the reviews on Goodreads are very clearly like, there's nothing about ADHD in this book at all. I also checked the index, but it didn't seem like the most thorough index. So I was like, maybe that doesn't mean anything, that ADHD is not in the index. But it does. It's not there because it's not in the book. And as far as I can tell, like the theories that the reviewers came up with is that it is sort of the publisher's equivalent of like including it for SEO purposes, that they just thought more people would pick it up if they slapped it on the cover, which is wild to me. And yeah, I have no idea. Like, that's the theory, but I have no idea why, how, what. Yeah, so I was totally disappointed in this book for reasons that were probably, I can't imagine, I don't want to blame Temple Grandin. Like, I don't know that that was her choice, but I don't know. Just a bizarre way, a bizarre new way for a book to disappoint me. Is to just not be about what it says it's about on the cover. So that was too bad. The book that I read an actual chapter of was The Art of Doing Business Across Cultures by Craig Storti. 10 countries, 50 mistakes, and 5 steps to cultural competence. I read 1 country and 5 mistakes. I don't know if I got any of the steps to cultural competence. But this is a book about like doing business internationally or with, you know, staff from different countries. And I can't really speak to it overall because I didn't read it. I read the chapter about Germany because my partner's sibling and her husband, who are also two of my closest friends, live in Germany. And I've visited a few times over the last several years and have, like, thought, not right now, but, you know, have thought about moving there, you know, as a far-off potential. But have thought about what working in Germany would be like. So read the chapter on Germany and talked to them about what parts of it rang true. And as far as their employment experiences go, most of it seemed pretty sound in terms of advice. I feel like the main things, so each country has 5 like, you know, mistakes or misunderstandings you can run into. I feel like with this Germany chapter, some of them all could have been grouped into one, and he sort of broke them up to keep the pattern going, because like Americans give a lot of positive feedback and Germans don't, and they find it insincere, was separate from Americans don't like to give negative feedback. And also, Americans exaggerate positivity, which I feel like all could have been one point, but he split them up into three. But that all resonated with my German folks. The one that bummed me out that I mentioned when Matthew was talking about the book that he read was the fact that Germans separate their have a very a dedicated separation of work time and private time. And this is true, I think, culturally. You can just see in, like, laws in Germany and the United States as far as, like, workers' rights and how the work week is structured. Was the one that really, struck me as, like, I don't know that you're describing American culture as much as just, like, a bad, unhealthy relationship with work, which maybe, you know, granted is maybe American culture, but he sort of treats it as neutral to positive when I see it as very bad. Like the example that he gives, he's like, Americans don't mind working some unpaid overtime and coming in on weekends to get the job done. Whereas Germans want to leave work when the workday is over. And I'm like, yeah, who could have thought? Just like did not endear me to the author's perspective overall. Like specifically one of the things, like in the example, he has these like little dialogues and scenes in which, you know, two characters from different cultures are running into a misunderstanding. And in the one for that section, like the German employee, you know, the American was like, oh, please stay just a few more minutes so you can give your presentation. And the other guy's like, it's 4 o'clock. I have to pick up my kids at 4:30. And I'm like, I don't know how I'm supposed to be empathizing with the American in this scene. When the German is like clearly in the right, like he's not going to just not pick up his kids. I don't know. And it's also, I will say, from the way I've described it, you may have guessed, by an American author and fairly American-centric, though he does, I checked in the introduction to see if he mentioned Canada at all. He does say, like, if you are not from the U.S. or, like, he might have even said, like, a country that's very similar to the U.S. in some ways, like Canada. Says that if you're not from the U.S. or one of the other countries that have chapters dedicated to them in this book, you could use this book to better understand working with Americans as well as working with various other cultures. But yeah, that was that one. Some stuff that seems useful probably, and some of it that bummed me out.
Yeah, there was a lot of things that had the potential to bum me out in the business stuff.
Yeah.
Like, I've read a couple of memoirs about people who, like, oh, well, one of them was the sabbatical and the other one was by the editor of Teen Vogue, who was like, when she got to Teen Vogue, was like, oh, I don't know about this work culture. People leave at the end of their workday and go to Pilates.
Was that a problem?
It apparently was a problem then, and during her tenure there, people would stay late and be excited about things and work a lot, and then she burned out at the age of 30 and was like, oh, well, now I'm in a position where I can choose to do other things now. And I was like, I don't know if I really feel all that inspired by this example of someone burning themselves out on work by the age of 30. I mean,
and taking others down with them as they do it.
Well, you know, we're all just little road bumps on the way to greater production and greater profits.
Ouch!
The last book I started reading, and I don't feel the need to read more of it, is called 100 Side Hustles, Ideas for Making Extra Money.
Yeah, I considered reading this one, so I'm excited that you did.
He wrote another one that I borrowed but didn't read and probably won't read, called The $100 Startup or $100 side hustle, something like that. Anyway, it had a bicycle on it. Don't look at me.
That is another one that I feel like I've gotten more than one request for at the public library.
Yeah.
$100 startup, I think.
I feel all these books can basically be subtitled like, "Help, I'm starving to death and drowning. How do I like pay rent this month?"
Yes. Sometimes, yeah. So one of the things I liked about this was it broke it up into different kind of types of ways or types of side hustles. So there was like one where it was like, oh, find a way to teach what you know how to do to other people and monetize that in a certain way. And one whole section, which was like, I had no idea people do this, is like basically create yourself as the middleman between someone who provides a product and people who want to buy it. So you set up a website to sell it to people, and then you have the people who provide it. And sometimes you don't even like hold any stock whatsoever. You either use Amazon will hold people's stuff in their warehouses and do the fulfillment for them. And I guess some other people do this too. So basically you're just selling stuff that you don't have to other people. Like it blew my mind. They weren't all just about like, I just really want to make, I need to make money kind of thing. It was like a super depressing story about this guy who was in college and needed to make money because he had a wife and kids. So he like bought people's textbooks and sold them for profit. And I'm like, ugh, this sounds awful and stressful, but I don't know. Maybe people like it.
Was starting a podcast one of them?
Listen, mister, I don't want to deal with a Patreon.
That's my name.
one of the nice side hustles that I thought was kind of inspiring was this science high school teacher who was like, oh, there are all these invasive toads in my neighborhood. I'm going to start up a company where I go and I capture all these toads that are invasive species and poison people's pets and stuff. So I was like, oh, yay. You know, both removing invasive species from environment and I guess also doing a thing that you like anyway because you're an amateur herpetologist. Is it herpetology? Reptiles?
I don't know.
Anyway.
They're amphibians. But
so like there are 100 examples. Each one gets a little write-up and description, you know, how much they put in from the front end, how much they're making per year at this point, how long it took for them to get there because, you know, there's like either a slow build or sometimes, you know, they went from one idea to another idea to a third idea before that one finally started making money. I found it interesting that it was kind of like, oh, this person only put in $16, but also has a master's degree in this topic and, you know, has some friends who will provide them free hosting. And I'm like, all of those things are resources. Like, just because it's not something that you had to pay for doesn't mean it's not integral to the thing. So it was interesting, but like not something I'm going to finish reading because the idea right now of like now is not a good time, me energy wise side hustling at all. Mm-hmm. at all. So I didn't go for it, but I thought like potentially, like you said, if the other book has been getting a lot of requests, this is something that someone might be interested in. Because the stories themselves are pretty interesting. Like the way different people, you know, take something and either it goes big or it's just a steady. Like there was one guy who, I think his website is called Lasers Are Awesome. And he takes people's tweets and he puts it on a plaque for you. So if you want to immortalize that retweet, he'll do it for you. And he does a whole bunch of other stuff too. But that was kind of funny. I think that's it.
Well, let's wrap it up then. I mean, we have to do appeal factors, but do we though?
Appeal factors.
The appeal factors of these books is that people want to survive capitalism and lots of other people believe they have the secret to do so the best way. And
people like lists. Lots of lists. And anecdotes.
People like lists. There's one book that I didn't talk about. That made me see red that I could have finished because it was very short, but I would have done a murder. I told you guys about it. That was like the difference between the middle class and millionaires. And it was all shit. Like millionaires take risks and
have rich
the middle
parents.
Class plays it safe. And yeah, and I like I was like, well, this book doesn't have an index, but if it did, I'd like to check it for inherited wealth. don't think it was mentioned.
I actually went at one point to look up like what makes a good business book, and it was just a whole bunch of lists of like I just found several articles that were lists of like how to write a good business book, or like, and they were basically like business articles about how to write business books so you could sell your business book and make money. And I was just like, yeah, this is so circular.
It seems like a pretty circular system, because I do feel like for some people writing, the sort of how to, and like going back to the like personality test, work training session thing, is like, it's coming from a person who, like, I know a lot about, you know, success and marketing because I teach people how to be successful and do marketing, but like my experience and success in that has been doing the thing. It's all very circular. Like it doesn't work as a, like if everyone did what you did to be successful, we would have lots of books about how to be successful and no economy.
Yes. I hear you. But like you say, a lot of this is like people want to survive capitalism. Some people are like just desperately treading water to do so and just want to figure out how to like on a base level. And some people are like, I participate. This is the thing I do and are very excited about it. And so you figure out what attitude they're at and therefore.
Yeah, I feel like some of the appeal of some, not all of these, not all like business nonfiction, like that encompasses a lot of things, but some of the sort of typical archetypal ones that you would think of, I feel like part of the appeal is people want like a cheat code or like a shortcut.
Yep.
They're like, what's the password that I have to put in to make enough money?
Rich parents.
Yeah, it's rich parents.
A lot of people want inspiration. Like, so really what they want is pep talks. It's really just about, like, you have to keep going. You have to keep figuring out how to make this work. So we're just going to give you different version of pep talks over and over and over again in order to help you keep going. And people get really into these. Like, they truly feel like it has given them a unique perspective or a new way of looking at things that helps them do better, get better, be more successful. Now, whether or not it actually results in literal success in which they are less financially strapped or more, you know, achieving more or whatever it is in the long run, a lot of times that's not really the point. It's not really the point, and that's fine.
One of us should have read a book about like unionizing.
Oh, God, really?
Labor organizing, because I think that's that's a missing piece, perhaps.
Yep. Okay, on that note, we're done.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Book Club for Masochists. Find us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, and Spotify. Like, rate, subscribe, and leave us a review if you liked us so other people can find us.
For all our URLs and social media accounts, the four in our name is in numeral. You can go to our website at bookclub4m.com. Join our Facebook group at facebook.com/groups/bookclub4m and find us on Twitter at bookclub4m or on Instagram at bookclub4m. Our email address is bookclub4m@gmail.com.
On our website, you can find show notes that will provide links to the things we mentioned and social media info for everyone who appeared on this episode.
You can also suggest a genre or a title. We have a form on our website that you can fill out. No promises, though.
All opinions are our own and do not reflect our places of employment, if they exist.
Our theme music is To Arrakis by Dark Sun from the Free Music Archive.
New episodes are the first and third Tuesday of every month.
Join us again on Tuesday, November 17th, when we will be doing Reader's Advisory and trying to come up with holiday gifts for each other.
Then on Tuesday, December 1st, we'll be discussing the genre that you chose for us to read. Do weird fiction!
Megan, you're not allowed to read more than 3 books anymore. I can't edit these hour and a half long podcasts.
Oh.